For the first time since partition, Northern Ireland has elected more Irish nationalists than unionist MPs. Speaking since the result to Thursday's election, Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald said, "We're heading towards a border poll. I can't give you a definitive date, but we need to do the spade work now and prepare ourselves." Tony Blair's right-hand man and key negotiator of the Good Friday Agreement, Jonathan Powell, now predicts a united Ireland in 10 years.
Keeping the United Kingdom together is going to be Boris Johnson's big challenge. And you'll recall that polls showed that the Tory party members who voted him leader were happy to lose Scotland and Northern Ireland if that was the price of getting Brexit. And that's what he's going to face in terms of his supporters. Now, in Northern Ireland, once you put a border between Northern Ireland and the rest of the United Kingdom, Northern Ireland's going to be part of a united Ireland for economic purposes. That will increase the tendency towards a united Ireland for political reasons too. And I think that will happen within 10 years.
Do you think there will be a united Ireland? Within 10 years?
I think there's a good chance there'll be a united Ireland within 10 years.
Within five?
Not probably within five. And in terms of Scotland, the problem is that the more he rejects a referendum, the more he says there won't be a referendum, the more he's going to increase the resentment of Scottish voters, and the more he's going to increase support for independent Scotland. If he does that, it's going to be incredibly hard to prevent independence happening in due course. We can't stand in the way of that if we believe in consent.
So, that's one of the key negotiators of the Good Friday Agreement saying, predicting a united Ireland within 10 years. What do you all think? 03030 80 55 55. The commentator Phil Kelly is with us. Good morning to you, Phil.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And the news editor, political editor Sam McBride, still with us. If he's right, Sam, that's a united Ireland within your lifetime. Do you think that's a credible prediction?
Well, I think that it is certainly possible in a way that it was, pardon me, pretty much impossible based on what we could see about 4 years ago prior to Brexit. And I think that only the most blind unionists are denying that there has been this significant shift, both within Northern Ireland, and that's very significant, but almost as significantly across the rest of the UK, the rise of English nationalism, not in a way that is maybe very apparent to some people, but as was said in that clip there, the poll which showed that there are a lot of people in England who would rather get Brexit done, even if that means losing Northern Ireland completely from the Union, rather than retaining Northern Ireland and jeopardising Brexit, the way in which not a single Conservative MP voted against the Irish Sea border proposal from Boris Johnson, even those who are the most staunch in their unionism as they see it, were not prepared to vote against that. And so therefore the Union is in a much more precarious position than it was. And I think that also in alliance with that, we now have a Prime Minister with a massive mandate who is the sort of person who potentially is the type of Conservative who is going to infuriate people in Scotland, Irish nationalists, who is going to appeal more and more to his base in England, and that is going to become something of a spiral effect. So there are very significant concerns here, I think, for unionism. I think one of the challenges for unionism in Northern Ireland, which has a limited influence in this wider debate, is what is it doing within Northern Ireland in terms of the rise of the Alliance Party, in terms of stemming the flow of people away from unionist parties, and to a certain extent Geoffrey Donaldson was acknowledging that this morning. But secondly, what is it doing to build bridges with unionists and with others in the rest of the UK? And I mean, when you look at things like RHI and the culture of free money and the grasping nature of some people in the DUP's unionism, it's really not very attractive, I think, to people outside Northern Ireland. And while it might be expedient in the short term and it might be popular in the short term with voters in Northern Ireland, it's very, very risky behaviour.
Phil?
Well, I think that Sam absolutely sums it up. I've said on your show before, Stephen, that unionism sits Canute-like on a shore and it is trying to reverse many, many irreversible tides. And the two most important of those are demographic change and economic reality. With Brexit, what you have is the economic viability of the North, which is already questionable pre-Brexit, is now, you know, off the scale. It will have a devastating effect on our local economy. So therefore, what underpinned the Union is gone. And I've seen many commentators saying that what unionism lacks in its leadership is that F.W. de Klerk-style leader who understands the political reality on which they stand. Nowhere in mainstream unionism or wider unionism do you have that kind of leader. I think Mike Nesbitt the other day was hinting at it. But, you know, don't forget that unionism has believed that unionism was about, you know, didn't understand that you don't have to be British to be a unionist. You don't have to wear a Union Jack headscarf or a Crown brooch to be a unionist. What they were unable to do was sell a pro-union vision to a wide and inclusive demographic of people.
Can I remind you, Phil, that Sinn Féin's vote at this election was down 6.7%?
Yes, and what I need to remind you when you introduce this piece is that the calls for a border poll are not limited to Sinn Féin or, you know, what could be described as republicanism. There's a really...
Well, the SDLP weren't calling for one in this election.
Well, indeed, but, you know, they're hinting at it in their own partitionist way. But, you know, what, there is a wider conversation taking place within civic nationalism, both south of the border and here, and it's inclusive, it's pragmatic, it's realistic, it's tackling the big issues around the economy, all those things, and it's also calling on the Irish government to take action now, to start preparing, because if something is inevitable, then you need a plan for it. That's reasonable. But I want to say this, Stephen. Sammy Wilson has talked about his fantasy bridge to Scotland, okay? You've heard this in the last few days. That bridge will more than, if it was ever built, and it won't be, but if it was ever built, will lead to an independent Scotland that is within the EU, and that is the existential threat to Ulster unionism that it couldn't perceive, that the real dysfunctional union was not the European Union, but was the United Kingdom, and the rise of English nationalism, which Boris Johnson has capitalised on immensely, will be what totally erodes the foundations of the United Kingdom.
Sam?
One thing I think it's very important to say here is that I think there are very few things in politics or in life that are inevitable. And there is a sense among some Irish Republicans that Irish unity is the ultimate outcome of this process, that demographic change will bring it, that basically just a growing Catholic population in Northern Ireland will bring it. And that neglects to look at the reality, the very recent reality of how demographic change was continuing and has been going on for decades in Northern Ireland. And yet as recently as 4 years ago, Northern Ireland, polls showed, was more constitutionally secure than it had ever been in the history of the state. So events can radically alter how people perceive these things. And I think that while this was a very good election for nationalism in Northern Ireland, of course it was. It was an historic contest for nationalism to come back with a majority of the seats at Westminster. That is a remarkable feat, and there is much more evidence of healthy competition within nationalism, and that is something which is more comforting to Sinn Féin. There is a difficulty here for Sinn Féin. They are consistently losing votes in elections. They have
Why, Sam?
Per elections. Well, I think that there are a range of reasons for that, but there is clearly unhappiness with Michelle O'Neill's leadership. We knew that even within Sinn Féin, that is the case. 33% of people did not want her to be the Northern leader, did not want her to be vice president. That was before this election. And there is a sense that she is simply not up to the job, that if Stormont comes back, she is not somebody who is capable of holding the DUP to account. She is not capable of running Northern Ireland as a deputy first minister in the way that Martin McGuinness was. And so, therefore, I think there is a danger for Sinn Féin of believing some of its own rhetoric around this, that this is an inevitable rise.
Sam, Stephen, I think there's a danger of being distracted by internal politics of Sinn Féin and Sinn Féin as a political party. The unity debate is not a Sinn Féin debate. And Sam's right about demographics. Demographic change is happening, and it's irreversible. I said that before. But the most important tie that I mentioned is economic reality. And that's exactly the same thing that will impact in Scotland. And it's the reason why Scotland will ultimately leave the Union. And it may leave the Union before Northern Ireland does. But when it does, that will be the end point. So therefore, it requires political maturity, and it requires a sensible approach to say, we need, as a society, to start having this conversation of what that New Ireland would look like.
But the Irish government are saying, Phil, it's not the right time for a border poll, and it would need to be led by them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but I think it's about 65% of Irish citizens actually back unity. Now, the Irish government, you know, Leo Varadkar is a very conservative figure, but, you know, you cannot ignore the reality, and Brexit is a fundamental shift. A fundamental shift, and you've seen that in Scotland, and you've seen it in the North, that England has set one destiny, that the priority for the English electorate is to get Brexit done. That is something rejected, you know, enormously by the people of Scotland, and it's something rejected by the people in the north of Ireland. So therefore, the contradictions and the divisions in the so-called United Kingdom cannot be avoided.
Let's see what we're saying at home this morning. Here's Jonathan in Newton Orange. Morning, Jonathan.
Hi, Stephen. I agree with Sam there on the points that he made there previous about Sinn Féin. Look, you know, this is an issue that I think Sinn Féin are pushing, and it's a very dangerous issue that Sinn Féin are pushing. For 30 years, and I don't want to go back to the past, but for 30 years, Sinn Féin and the IRA put a campaign against our country and our people. It killed a lot of Protestants, it killed a lot of Catholics, it blew up a lot of jobs, and the economy suffered. People are forgetting one thing. What if loyalists do the exact same that the IRA did for 30 years if they got a United Ireland? Has anybody ever questioned that? Now, I'm not advocating violence for one minute, but that could happen.
That doesn't mean, Jonathan, that Sinn Féin is not... Jonathan, that doesn't mean that Sinn Féin is not entitled to have an aspiration of a United Ireland.
I'm not saying that. They're entitled to whatever they want to, but I'm trying to explain the dangers that are in that. And let's face it, there's a lot of Catholics in Northern Ireland who don't want a United Ireland. They're quite happy within the Union because they've got good jobs, they live in nice houses, their families are well off, they have their lovely holidays. So they're well off in GB because they're getting good money.
That's exactly the point that unionism needs to be making. It needs to understand that being pro-union doesn't mean having a British identity or doesn't mean cloaking yourself in a Union Jack. It's been unable to make that argument. We've seen the sickening banners that were put up during the last election, which turned voters off, I think, the DUP. Now, you said about violence. Violence is an irrelevance. If people want to turn to criminality in response to a democratic conversation taking place, there's nothing we can do about that. But if unionism or loyalism wants to undermine further its position in the Union, then it would go down that route, because the people of England already pay more money in the taxes to prop up a failing state and a failing economy in Northern Ireland than they ever paid into the EU. And if you think that the rise of English nationalism can be somehow thwarted and they will cozily embrace you more if there's a campaign of violence in the north, then you're deluded.
Exactly. What I'm saying is to you, Stephen, a while back there, about, I can't remember, 5 or 6 years ago, you'd done a poll in a studio in the BBC, and the guy said it would have to raise taxes by 21% in the Irish state to pay for Northern Ireland. And that was without any maybe trouble. That was just to run this place.
Sam, has there been any credible attempt by nationalists or indeed nationalist parties to try to say to unionists, you will be safe in a United Ireland?
There has certainly been lots of rhetoric about that, and somebody like Mary Lou MacDonald has, I suppose, slightly more credibility when she says this to unionists, because she does not have an IRA past in the way that Gerry Adams has, albeit he denies that, as we know. But I think that when you step back and look at this, one of your callers, I think it was Jonathan from Newton Ard, said there, he brought up the issue of the IRA. Some people will roll their eyes at that and think, for goodness sake, why is somebody bringing up the IRA when we're 20 years past the agreement, we've been at peace for a very long time? But I think when you step back and look at this, for a lot of voters, the IRA is one of the greatest detractors from the Irish unity debate. And you have to wonder, if it wasn't for that, where would we be at this point? Where would Irish republicanism be if they had gone down a Scottish National Party route of trying to do this peacefully? There is a sense now that even a new generation of Sinn Féin politicians, we saw John Finucane, even when he was trying to appeal to Green voters, to SDLP voters, to people who were not instinctive Sinn Féin voters, he couldn't bring himself to condemn the attempt to kill Nigel Dodds when he was visiting his very sick child in the in Belfast Royal Victoria Hospital. I mean, that is something which is a constant difficulty for Sinn Féin, and will be, and yet it is very difficult for them to disown those people, because those people are central to its support base in Northern Ireland. So yes, there is a move towards this, and yes, Phil is right when he says that it is not just about Sinn Féin. There are people people in all sorts of parties, including even the Greens and Alliance and some of the smaller parties who are very enthusiastic about Irish unity. But there is a simple there's a simple element of this as well. If you're really pressing for this in this election, if it's a central issue for you as a voter, there is only one logical party, I think, to vote for, and that is Sinn Féin. They are the party that are prioritising this above anyone else, and their vote has gone down more than anyone else. And so therefore, while there's a big risk here for Sinn Féin, for unionism rather, I don't think it's necessarily as simple and as straightforward as this being an inevitable stampede towards Irish unity.
Here's Richard in Belfast. Morning, Richard. One second, Phil. Morning, Richard.
Morning, Stephen. These talks, if Sinn Féin and the DUP do the right thing and before January the 13th get Stormont up and running, but for totally the wrong reason, they must avoid an election, another election at all costs, because they'll get hammered again. What chance does it have of lasting?
Well, that's why they're saying they need to get it right before it does get up and running again, to be fair to them, doesn't it, Richard?
Yes, but I fear that they're doing it for the wrong reason. They must avoid another election because they'll get hammered again.
Thank you, Richard. William. Morning, William.
Good morning, Steve. Stephen, the first lesson politicians should know is how to count. The Irish people in Northern Ireland is nearly equalising the British people. So you're going to have a new Ireland in closer relationship, no matter whether you're inside Europe, outside Europe or not. The other thing I would add, there'll be no border poll until Stormont is up and running. And the British government secretly have told Sinn Féin that. You can't turn around...
Well, you don't know what they've told Sinn Féin.
You can't compound the problem with a border poll without the systems all running.
Sam, if I can talk about something that's maybe uncomfortable to talk about, if there was any security assessment of, and it's euphemistically described as resistance from loyalists or loyalist paramilitaries to this so-called economic United Ireland as a first step, what do you think that security assessment would say? Do you think loyalist paramilitaries have either the capability or the intent in creating violence here as part of some type of resistance?
The honest answer to that is that I don't know. But I think the more central question...
It's an uncomfortable question even to talk about it, isn't it? Well, but it needs talked about.
It does, but I think the more central question here for loyalist paramilitaries, if they're thinking about that, and clearly, as my colleague Ben Laurie was able to report from one of those loyalist meetings, which were closed to most of the media, there were people who were talking in these very militant terms. So some people are thinking in these terms, and I think one of the dangers for all of us is that those people, having poured their energies into trying to get a political solution to this as they saw it, but having seen that fail pretty spectacularly in this election, what do they do now? But the central question for them and the difficulty for them is this. If they want to become violent, who do they become violent against? This is not like the Troubles. This is not a case of at least pretending that they're taking on the IRA. They would be taking on the apparatus of the British state. And it is very difficult to see a logic to that or any sort of remotely successful outcome from their perspective to doing that. And so therefore, while there may be a temptation to lash out, there may be a temptation to go down the non-violent but very disruptive route of the sort of flag protests, albeit they descended into violence in some cases, I'm not really sure that strategically that does anything for unionism or loyalism or changes this. What it does do is express and make public their displeasure at this, but ultimately I'm not sure that really gets what they want out of this.
Phil?
Well, it's a sideshow, and you've seen these protests flare up and then fizzle out, and you know, it offers nothing. As I said before, if you want to defend the union, don't retreat to ever narrower identities of Britishness or loyalists. You need to reach out, and that's where there's the failure in unionism. One of your last callers made a really important point about crisis and about the need for the devolved institutions to come back, because crisis, yes, absolutely adds momentum to the calls and the energy around the Irish unity debate, but it also limits its chance of success. Because what you need, what is desirable before unity, is a stable Northern Ireland that voters in the South say, right, we can make a go of this, and voters here feel secure in their identities to say, we're mature enough to have a conversation around a new Ireland. So absolutely, I think there'll be real momentum to get those institutions back in a meaningful way. But, you know, anyone who is deluding themselves about the inevitability that this poll will be coming should wake up to the reality, because there is a renewed energy around the debate, and it's not some romantic aspiration, far-off aspiration. It's a credible conversation about the economic reality, how we change as a society, how we become more inclusive, more progressive, and with the election of Boris Johnson and the delivery of Brexit, that becomes more pressing, and that's the political reality we stand on today.
Michael's in Londonderry. Morning, Michael.
Michael's in Derry. Stephen, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing okay, thank you.
Stephen, my take on this is this border poll is, I think Sinn Féin should hold back. I think, and I'm coming at this, as you know very well, as I'm not a Sinn Féin supporter, but if Sinn Féin push for a border poll now and they don't get it their own way, we're back to the Scotland scenario where, you know, they're not going to have a chance to do it again. And I also think that the reason that they are pushing it, as we don't know what Brexit's bringing, Stephen, and I talk as a businessman here in Derry, we don't know what Brexit's bringing. Brexit could either make or break us. If it makes us, Stephen, if it makes us with this wee place of ours, then the chances of Sinn Féin getting a good result in a border poll would diminish very quickly. So, you know, people talk about United Ireland and it's all this aspiration. Fair enough, I'm a nationalist, as you know, but at the present time, you know, Ireland's not doing very, they're probably not doing very well either. So I think Sinn Féin, I think they should wait 5 or 10 years. I think if they push it now, Stephen, they're going to shoot themselves in the foot, but I can see why they're pushing it.
Michael,
now.
Thank you. Gary, stay there, Michael. Morning, Gary.
Morning, Stephen. I find myself agreeing with Michael from Londonderry this morning, but let me, before I get on to my point about United Ireland, let me get on to Phil. Phil was calling for 4 years there for his utopia of a country with a calling for a general election with Corbynism. That's not well put to bed, but he's using Scotland as an example of what the SNP could do. So I don't know if you know this or not, but the combined vote for would be pro-union parties in Scotland, even in this election, where there's SNP returned 50 or 48 MPs, was higher than the SNP's vote. And every indication in Scotland shows that there's a higher majority for the union. So there is than there is for leaving.
I know I'm going back, Gary, too, because Phil's away. I know I'm going back to our first conversation that we were having at the top of the show today. But why do you think both the DUP and Sinn Féin did not do as well as they thought they would in the election? What do you think's going on the ground?
Because I said in your show last week, so I did, and I told you, and I predicted that the DUP should come on and would come on, but it is about health, it is about education, it is about everything that matters to people, and I see this on a daily basis in my job, and I hear it from both communities.
But then there's another question that we should all start thinking about. Do you really think the DUP and Sinn Féin, and maybe you do, and that's fair enough, but it should be thought about, are the best people to deliver for health and education? Or is it the Alliance Party? Or is it the Ulster Unionist Party? Or is it the SDLP? Like, have people actually tested these parties?
Stephen, let me tell you exactly who it is. It's what the people are crying out for. It's every single party you mentioned there. So it is, and it's all up a storm.
Yeah, but surely what you should do, like, look, I when I was asking Sinn Féin, I listened to Michelle O'Neill on Talkback when she was doing the interview with them, and she said this election's about Brexit. And I thought to myself,
That was my point. When there's a waiting list
that's gone through the roof, this election's about Brexit. So my point is this. Have you all actually sat down and worked out for yourselves which political party in Northern Ireland is best equipped to sort out your health, to save your life,
Stephen, Sinn Féin told us before this election, with the others, that this election was about Brexit. It wasn't about a United Ireland. A vote in this election didn't necessarily mean that it was a vote for an Irish unity referendum. Now, the backtracking on that, and my prediction last week in your show was also they're going to get back into Stormont, which they will, and they'll work for this unity referendum from within Stormont, and that will be their tactic of destabilising this country.
Gary, thank you very much indeed.